At the moment called A Wiser Way to Live. It's a study of the book of James, a letter that appears in the Christian scriptures, what Christians often call the New Testament. We kicked it off last week, forgetting what day it is. Not a great start. But we kicked off last week and we talked about some of the background to the book. May have been written by James, the brother of Jesus. Probably more likely written after James' death. He was martyred, you know, in sort of midway through the first century, and perhaps people sort of collected some of his teachings, wrote them down as a way of preserving that legacy. Certainly what we have, though, is a collection of teaching that's very reminiscent of Jesus, very close to the teaching of Jesus, and also steeped in Hebrew culture, not just the culture of the first century Jews, but the ancient Hebrew culture and the ancient Hebrew scripture. And today we're going to look at the first chapter. We're going to look at the whole thing, and I think we'll see just what a beautiful piece of literature it is and how powerfully informative it can be and transformative it can be. So Colin's going to come and read to us the whole chapter all the way through. We'll then sort of break it down a little bit. But as Colin reads, let's just receive the wisdom of this message and let it flow over us. Okay, Colin.
James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes scattered among the nations. Greetings. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. Believers in humble circumstances ought to take pride in their high position, but the rich should take pride in their humiliation, since they will pass away like a wild flower. For the sun rises with scorching heat and withers with the plant. Its blossom falls and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich will fade away even while they go about their business. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial because, having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. Then, after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. Don't be deceived, my dear brothers and sisters. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. He chose to give us birth through the word of the truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of all he created. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror and, after looking at himself, goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do. Those who consider themselves religious and yet do not keep a tight rein on their tongues deceive themselves, and their religion is worthless. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world.
So we're looking at this chapter, and as I said before, it's a series called A Wiser Way to Live, and we're not maintaining that we have a wiser way to live, like we've got some deep wisdom more than others, but rather we're looking at this letter and reflecting on the fact that it's sharing wisdom with us. It's talking about wisdom as something that comes from above, something that's transformative, something that can expand our minds, give us a higher consciousness, an enlightened way of living life and being. And so we want to sort of tap into that as much as we can as we listen to these words, as we listen to the flow of this letter. This first chapter is kind of a little tricky because lots of different issues come up. You may have noticed that. I mean, I think sometimes at first reading it's a little confusing because it seems to shift from one thing to another. But what we have here really, I think, is an introduction to a lot of the things that are going to come out in the course of the rest of the letter, which we'll deal with over the subsequent weeks. Things like speech, things like wisdom, things like dealing with our emotions, issues to do with equity. Today what we're going to touch on each aspect of this first chapter. And again, try to absorb some of this wisdom. If you like, try to let the words read us rather than just analyzing them. But in order to do that, I want to try and break this first chapter down a little bit. And this is very arbitrary and very much just my opinion about how we might do that. There's lots of different ways you could break this chapter down. But I think if we can break it down a little bit, rather than dissecting it to analyze, we can actually see some of the flow, some of the rhythm in it, and then we perhaps can get a deeper understanding of what's going on here. As I said, in some ways it's a prelude to what's to come, and in other ways it's a summary of the letter. So let's look at a way of breaking it down. We've got that breakdown there for us. So if we just exclude the greeting in verse 1, which we looked at last week, I've broken it down into this issue of being grounded or centered, and wisdom is how we center ourselves. Well, that's how the author is talking about wisdom. Wisdom is something that grounds us and centers us so that we have some kind of core stability as we go through life. So there's sort of these three phases of grounding. It starts off in the first few verses, grounded from the outside in. Stuff happens to us, and wisdom helps ground us and to persevere. Groundedness from within. In other words, stuff goes on the inside, whether stuff's happening on the outside or not, but there's things on the inside, our weaknesses, our tendencies, our habits, some of which aren't always healthy, that can be problematic. Wisdom helps ground us internally in a different kind of way, in a new kind of wisdom. And then thirdly, there's groundedness from the inside out. In other words, there's a flow from our lives, our reactions, our responses to situations, and wisdom helps ground us so that we're more tuned in to ourselves, more self-aware, and more tuned in to the needs of others, more able to be compassionately present to others. So there's this sort of flow, I think, in this first chapter of outside in, and then inside out. And we'll just look at the first chapter in through that lens. Let's go to the first issue then, grounded from the outside in. Breaking this section down into a further four sections, we're going to look at each of these brief sections here. The first one is the statement that trials can produce maturity. Let's look at those first three verses, or verses 2 to 4. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So this isn't a novel idea. Jesus talked a lot about trials, and to even be joyful in trials, the early church leader Paul talked about a similar kind of thing. There's a sense that life is difficult, right? Life is difficult. That's an acknowledgement. Trials, suffering, difficulties are just an inevitable part of life. I think there's also an insinuation here, perhaps, that if we're really following Jesus, if we're really following the way of Jesus, which means sacrifice and selflessness, putting ourselves last rather than first, putting others first, that kind of life almost inevitably is going to result in difficulties, trials. We're going to have struggles, right? So perhaps we could even look at this the other way around. If we're not experiencing struggles in life, then we may not be following Jesus. We may not actually be pursuing that truth that we claim to have. So there's an inevitability to this. But what this is saying is that actually we can be grounded through those trials. We don't need to be thrown around by them. We can actually hold fast in those trials. They can actually produce something really good in us, something really healthy. There's that idea of perseverance producing maturity. In some translations, this last section talks about perfection, not like we've accomplished it, like we are perfect, but we're being perfected. Something is being transformed within us as a result of these trials. And I think probably most of us would say, perhaps grudgingly, that it's in the difficult times of life that we've really changed the most for the better, right? It's through difficulties that's what's been transformative in our lives. At the same time, we also know, and we probably have experience of experiencing difficulties, and we don't react well to them. They kind of throw us around, and they can lead to all kinds of bitterness and resentment and that kind of thing. So this next section goes on to address that, because it talks about wisdom grounding us through text, so through trust. So let's look at the text for the next few verses. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. So here's what the author is saying. Okay, trials happen, suffering, difficulties happen, all kinds of them, as it said in that first section. But wisdom is what grounds us. And wisdom comes from God. There's this wisdom from above. It's a gift from God. If we just ask God, help, give us this wisdom way of living. If we ask and trust, which is perhaps another way to interpret that word faith, to have belief, to have faith, because it's saying don't ask without belief, but ask with belief. In other words, ask with trust. This is a relational exchange here. The imagery is of the Father giving a gift willingly, gladly, generously, without finding fault, so impartially. It's like this wisdom, this higher consciousness, this way of Jesus is very knowable. It's revealed to us impartially, freely. We just have to trust. We just have to say, okay, that's what I want. That's what I'm going to put my trust in. Rather than looking at all the struggles and all the difficulties and everything that's throwing us around, that's what we're going to trust in. And this imagery is of without that grounding, we're thrown around. We're tossed around by the waves. It's kind of a very graphic image, and we may have experienced being in a storm in a boat, or when we're in the swimming in the ocean and the waves are powerful. Sometimes they get control of us, and we're no longer in control. That image is, I think, the lack of groundedness that comes when we don't have this higher wisdom, this higher consciousness. And this theme of double-mindedness is a regular one throughout James. There's a higher way to live, and there's another lower way to live, a higher consciousness and a lower consciousness. And we can't kind of do both. So if we're trusting in God, if we're trusting this higher consciousness, this higher way, then that's going to, if we're really trusting, then that's going to affect how we deal with what's going on around us. But if we're not really trusting that, then we're just going to react to what's going on around us like anybody else. The author's calling us to something different. Let's look at the third aspect of this first section. And this is perhaps the sort of turning point, really, in this whole first section. Material wealth ungrounds us. I was almost going to write there, material wealth can unground us. In other words, there's nothing wrong with being rich. But the text actually suggests that it actually ungrounds us. The comfort of material wealth is something that's in the way rather than an advantage. Let's look at the text for this next section. We're going to work our way all the way through this letter. Believers in humble circumstances ought to take pride in their high position, but the rich should take pride in their humiliation, since they will pass away like a wild flower. For the sun rises with scorching heat and withers the plant. Its blossom falls and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich will fade away even while they go about their own business. Now this is, in one sense, shocking, right? Because it's like, wow, isn't the object of life to be at least stable financially and materially. I mean, wouldn't that ground us? Isn't that something that's grounding? And for, you know, no matter how high we might think our spirituality is, I think a lot of us kind of, including myself, feel that way. Money can cause a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety. That can be one of the trials of life. Like, if only we had more money, if we had more financial stability, then we would be more stable as people. Well, the wisdom here is that that's not the case. In fact, the opposite is the case. And so in one sense, it's shocking. In another sense, it's not that shocking, because this sounds very much like Jesus. This whole letter, as we've said, is full of the teaching of Jesus. Sometimes it almost feels like it's Jesus saying these words, because it's so close to the teaching of Jesus recorded in the Gospels. Sometimes it's just allusions to the teaching of Jesus. We've also said there's a lot of allusions to Hebrew culture and to Hebrew scripture. I think we have that here. Let me illustrate that. First of all, the allusions to Jesus' teaching. We know Jesus said things like this in Matthew's Gospel, Matthew 23. The greatest among you will be your servant. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. This is the first shall be the last, and the last shall be first. This is the upside down kingdom of Jesus. This is Jesus saying, look, the very things that seem to bring stability, centeredness, groundedness, prosperity, are actually the things that can distract us. And Jesus came with a kingdom that was more visible to people who had less than it was to those who had a lot. We know that Jesus, for instance, says, you know, you can't serve two masters, this double-mindedness issue. You can't serve God and money. We know Jesus said to the rich young ruler, you've got everything together, but one thing you lack, go and sell everything you have and give it to the poor. This is sort of reminiscent of the teaching of Jesus. But Jesus was speaking in the spirit of the Hebrew prophet. So if we go to the book of Isaiah, we'll see some very familiar, the teaching of Isaiah, the prophecies of Isaiah were to the author of James. You'll see very similar language here. A voice says, cry out. And I said, what shall I cry? All peoples are like the grass, and all their faithfulness is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fall, because the breath of the Lord blows on them. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God endures forever. So let's just remember that the word of God endures. So that word, so the sort of the wisdom of God, that's what endures. But people, this is talking about people in general here, not just necessarily rich people, but people in general come and go. We're impermanent. There's an impermanency to our being. There's also, I think, reminiscent language here from the Psalms. So in Psalm 37, and I think this is a beautiful psalm and full of wisdom, which maybe we can just kind of try and absorb a little bit here. We're just going to read the first few verses. But you'll pick up, I think, some similar themes here where it says, do not fret because of those who are evil, or be envious of those who do wrong. For like the grass, they will soon wither. Like green plants, they will soon die away. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture, or as some translations say, dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness. You can see the similarities to some of the language in James here. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will do this. He will make your righteous reward shine like the dawn, your vindication like the noonday sun. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret, it leads only to evil. For those who are evil will be destroyed, but those who hope in the Lord will inherit the land. A little while and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. But the meek will inherit the land and enjoy peace and prosperity. Again, we'll see Jesus in a moment using very similar language. But there's this notion here of being centered on something other than our material stability. And, you know, I don't think it means, therefore, that all rich people are bad. I don't think that it means that. And we, as we've said before, are probably, in terms of the whole world, we are all here relatively rich. But it's saying, don't put your trust in that. And in fact, be aware of the fact that it can be a total distraction from really living life, because we go on to this final section in this opening third, where in verse 12, it talks about perseverance giving us real life. Let's look at what it says, just the one verse. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial. Sounds very like Jesus, that language. Blessed, right? Blessed are you when you are persecuted, right? Jesus said. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life and the Lord has promised to those who love him. Now that crown of life the language there is the laurel that the laurel crown that emperors would wear, that would be presented to athletes if they won an event. But I don't think we're meant to view this here as a reward for good behavior. Oh, well done, you behaved very well during your life. Here's a crown. That would seem a bit petty. Rather, it's the crown of life. And, you know, as we've talked about a lot recently, Jesus came to give us life, real life, that we experience through trust. So this is like the product of perseverance. This is the product of living in a centered, in a way centered on wisdom. We experience real life. That's the reward, if you like. It's worth doing. There's something beautiful about it, meaningful, fulfilling about it. It's the crown of life. And the fact that here the author returns to what they started off with at the beginning of this section, trials, right? So it count it joy when you have trials, we read in the first verse. And now it's wrapping up this opening statement, if you like, with blessed is the one who perseveres under trial. I think what we have here is, this is why I've broken it down this way. I think they're sort of close, it's two bookends. And the bookends are pointing to the trials in the middle, which I think are to do with material wealth, probably economic hardship. We don't know, it just says trials of all kinds, right? We don't know what the trials were. Some people think the church, it's a message to the church that's being persecuted, and it may be. But it seems to be more about, if we are going to identify anything, it seems to be more about persevering through economic hardship and even economic oppression from certain people, right? That may be the case. Now, we'll talk more about that next week, because chapter two kind of opens that up a little bit. Okay, so let's go back to our original list. So if we break this down into this flow of three kind of waves, we've got grounded from the outside in. Okay, so not only are we able to deal with what's coming at us, but actually what's coming at us can, with wisdom, be grounding for us and centering. That's a possible way to live, the author is saying. But we also need to be grounded from within. So it's not just about what's going on around us. Stuff happens on the inside regardless of what's going on the outside. Let's look at what they mean by that. And again, I've broken this down into a couple of sections. So this is the middle section. We're going to break it down into two. And the two issues here, I think, are temptation can unground us and leads to death. And wisdom from above grounds us and leads to life. Let's look at the first one of those in verse 13. When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. Then, after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. It's kind of ironic language, gives birth to death. I think what we're seeing here is this is a lot like addictive behavior, right? It seems to be describing addictive patterns. It's saying, I think, when it says, don't imagine that God, you know, don't be deceived. God doesn't tempt anybody. I think because the word for temptation here is the verb form of the word that's previously translated as trial. And some translations would say, in that first section we just looked at, they'd use the word temptation. Count it great joy when you experience all kinds of temptations. You know, we can see perhaps how these things are similar. They're very similar words. But I think what the author is saying is, look, that stuff that comes at you, that's not God punishing you. That's not God doing stuff to you. It's just stuff happens. But really what you can say is that stuff happens on the inside where we're enticed. We're tempted to think things, say things, do things. And as we do that, we establish habits. And those habits eventually become things that control us. They become addictions. And of course, we think about, you know, substance abuse, alcohol, food, sex, the sort of things that we would quickly point to as being addictive. But I think what the author is talking about here is things like our insecurity, our defensiveness, our guilt, our shame, all the things that we may feel about ourselves or think about other people that are kind of like seeds that kind of take root and gradually grow and become things that have power over us and can dominate us. So, it's not from the outside. This is something on the inside. Again, I think we all experience this, right? We have perhaps experienced it so much that we begin to forget that it's a habit. We struggle with things like self-esteem, insecurity. We believe things about ourselves that aren't true. And then they become our reality. They become our narrative. They become, and they cause us to compete with other people or to bring other people down because we feel so bad about ourselves. They cause problems in our relationships and all kinds of different difficulties. We're tempted because we don't have this groundedness and this centeredness through wisdom. And this is what the next section helps us look at. Wisdom from above grounds us, and rather leading to death, leads to life. So let's look at that passage. Don't be deceived, right? Don't be deceived. So it's almost there, that's a passive tense, isn't it? It's like, don't deceive yourselves, right? Be self-aware, have some open-mindedness here, my dear brothers and sisters. Every good and perfect gift is from above. Now, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. So that gift from above is a reference to what we were talking about earlier on in the passage. If anyone lacks wisdom, let them ask God, who gives freely. So this is wisdom coming down from above. He chose to give us birth through the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits for all he created. So in other words, again, there's that, we had that in the passage from Isaiah, this sense of word, wisdom, logos in the Greek, it's like the wisdom of God, the eternal meaning of God, the eternal higher consciousness, if you like, the eternal being of God is accessible to us, and it can produce fruit. The almost like the analogy there again of a seed that takes root and produces something really beautiful, something full of life rather than death. So God's wisdom, this higher consciousness, can help us be aware of what's going on the inside. Now, let me give you a little illustration of this, of how this worked in my life. This might seem a bit of a bizarre example, but I used to do a lot of running. Used to run marathons and that kind of thing. I don't anymore. Way too old. Who laughed at that? and I ran the Baltimore Marathon a few times. Has anybody ever run the Baltimore Marathon? It's quite a challenge, right? It's quite a challenge because there's hills and, you know, it's a challenging one. And I used to, so this, you know, I was in my mid-40s. My goal was generally, I want to break 4 hours, you know, do it within 4 hours, which is no, you know, I'm no hero. The people winning the race are doing it in half that time, just bear that, you know, they're running twice as fast. But to do that, I'd have to run about 9-minute miles. And so you train and practice and sort of, you know, get used to running a long way at 9-minute miles. And then, you know, gradually I would get better. And then on this particular occasion, I was running it, I can't remember how many times I ran it now, I was running it one October, and I thought, you know, I felt ready to do 8.5-minute miles. So, you know, you get there on the start, if you've run in a race like this, you know, everybody's sort of all G'd up, and I set off, start running, it's cool, it's early in the morning, so it's really cool, it's really beautiful. And somehow, after the first mile or so, I got in with a pacing pack, you know, a group of people who are running together at a certain speed, and somebody holds a sign. And this was the 8-minute milers, right? Just 30 seconds more or less, right? And I was just feeling really good. I just thought, maybe I could do 8 minutes, 8-minute miles. So I'm running along, 2, 3, 4, 5 miles, and I'm thinking, great. There was a voice inside my head, talk about this double-mindedness, that's going, don't be an idiot, right? Because in 26 miles time, or 26.2 miles time, And if you've ever run a marathon, the 0.2 on the end is the that really matters, right? When you're dead on your feet. So just don't be stupid. You know you can't do this. But there was something else, another voice or another double-minded side of me that was like, I think I can do this. I really think I can do this. And where's that coming from, right? Some form of competition. Some form of, you know, did I need to prove myself? I don't know. I don't think it came from a good place because the consequences are disastrous. I ran the first half in my record time. So I did the half marathon in my record time, and I'm just thinking, this is fantastic. What I didn't realize was it was getting hotter and hotter and hotter. It ended up being quite a warm day. And I was running too fast. So when I hit this big hill about three quarters of the way around, for the first time in my life, I got cramp, which is it's the only time I got it. Horrible experience. And it was like I was not in control of my legs anymore. They were in control of me. So I went into spasm in my legs. My adductors were going like this, and I couldn't even walk. And I'm staggering along, and unfortunately, it's really public, right? Because there are people lining the streets to cheer on the runners. And I could hear people say, oh, look at him, you know. But isn't it good that old people are still active these days, you know, bless him, you know. And I'm just like, look, I'm not normally like this, and I stagger and stagger. And the greatest shame, I think, when you're running like that is when you have to walk, you know, it's just. And so, anyway, I managed to get going again, but I had a similar experience on the final stretch. And there's loads of people there, and I sort of managed to stagger over the line. Had my worst time ever, because the last 5 miles took me a couple of hours. You know, it was ridiculous. So my point there is, we things take seed, thoughts, desires, tendencies, and we deny them. We know it's not right. No, don't be an idiot. But we just kind of, why not? Why not think that way about somebody else? Why not be aggressive in that situation to get your own way? Why not try to control when you're feeling insecure? And it works for us for a while. Like we manage, right? I got a good outcome then. That person did what I wanted them to do. Or I look quite good in that situation, like me for the first half of that marathon. But eventually it becomes a habit and it destroys us. And I think that's what the author is warning us against. He's saying, look, don't deceive yourselves. Be honest, be real. And that will lead to life. That will lead to health. Now let's go back again to our little schematic here. And we're on the home straight now. To use that analogy, running analogy. So now we've talked about being grounded from the outside in, being grounded on the inside, having that healthy center of wisdom, and then being grounded from the inside out. So let's look at this. There's sort of three aspects to this. Wisdom grounds our responses and our reactions. Let's look at the text here, 19 to 21. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. The Bible uses language like this, doesn't it? Like moral filth. It's like, when do we... The King James, you know what the King James Version translation of this is? Superfluous naughtiness. No kidding, look it up. Superfluous naughtiness. But only the Bible seems to use language like that, right? Moral filthiness. But again, I think we probably think of that, you know, we all have our moral code of what we think is filthy. I think what the author is talking about here is the sort of stuff that we've just been talking about, that what's going on the inside. Because here, the author is talking in a very similar vein to Jesus about anger. You know, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, don't be angry. The Bible also says there's such a thing as righteous anger. That's not what we're talking about here. This is not mindful anger. This is when we're reacting. And if you think about it, I think it's talking here. It says, listen, speak, be slow. The way we listen to people or not, the way we speak to people or not, our posture, our body language in terms of speech, as well as our verbal speech, our silence, all those things really are an expression of the runoff from our lives, right? The flow out from our lives. And it's incredibly powerful, and we'll look at this in a couple of weeks' time, where we look at speech in particular and how powerful and potentially destructive speech can be. But this is, we have to ask ourselves this question: what are we like to be around? In our homes, at work, in our neighborhoods, in our friendships, in our relationships? What kind of runs off from us? Is it kindness coming from a center? Is it honesty and humility coming from a center of wisdom? Or are we just reacting to whatever's going on around us? That really makes me mad. And that, you know, a little bit like we were talking about in the middle section, where we're unstable because we're not centered. And I think what the author here is saying is, if we want to live this meaningful kind of life, this, you know, when we were talking about the crown of life, this meaningful, satisfying, beautiful life that is offered to us, then we need to be centered in terms of how we're living life out, how it's coming out from us. And wisdom can do that for us. Let's look at the next slide. Wisdom grounds us in self-awareness, all right? So many of our reactions, many of the ways we respond to life, we all get this. We're not even thinking about it. We don't realize we're coming across that way because we form those habits, and we, almost by definition, we don't really recognize a habit. It's just normal now for us. We don't see it as being negative. Let's look at verse 22 to 25. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. Okay, so self-awareness. You know, it's denial, right? We see ourselves but then we turn away. I don't want to have to deal with the fact that I'm like that. But whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do. And again, here we have connotations with the teaching of Jesus, blessed are the poor in spirit, right? Jesus was in the Beatitudes, we'll look at those in a second, was talking about being blessed, it's the same word. And here we've got the opposite of, rather than looking into a mirror and then forgetting, we're told here, look into the perfect law and remember and stay focused on that. In other words, not only are we to look at ourselves with self-awareness, but with hope, because there's a better way to live, a transformative way to live, and wisdom can ground us in that way. Let's look at some scriptures, because you know this is something that Jesus talked about a lot. Okay, not just hearing but doing, the integrity of knowing something, hearing it, and then living it out. Jesus said, whoever has ears to hear, let them hear. And then he told a parable about sowing seed, right? We just heard about the seed being planted. So the parable of the seed, the sower, where seed is thrown around, and for all kinds of reasons, that wisdom, that word of God is snatched away. But at the end of the parable, it says, others like seed sown on good soil, hear the word, accept it, and produce a crop. That fruitfulness that James was talking about, some 30, some 60, some 100 times what was sown. So we have that from Jesus, right? Being hearers and doers, having integrity. It's one thing to know something, it's another thing to live it out. But we also see this in the Hebrew scripture. So again, let's go back to Isaiah in chapter 55. And here's Isaiah sort of speaking on behalf of God. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways. So we're talking about higher consciousness. We're talking about wisdom, right? This seems to be what we're talking about, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. As the rain and the snow come down from heaven and do not return to it without watering the earth and making it bud and flourish so that it yields seed for the flower and bread for the eater, so is my word that goes out from my mouth, this wisdom. It will not return to me empty, but will accomplish what I desire and achieve the purpose for which I sent it. So we have this Hebrew motif of the wisdom of God, the perfect law, if you like, producing something beautiful, producing something fruitful in the earth. And James is sort of calling us back to that and saying, just like Jesus did, listen and do, hear it and do it and live it. And pointing to the perfect law. Okay, so it's not just look at yourself and how you need a change and despair, but look at yourself, don't forget, and then live out this wisdom, live out this perfect law. And that, of course, that's what Jesus came to teach us, right? Jesus came to show us how to live. And perhaps more than in any place in the Gospels, we get that in the Sermon on the Mount, which begins this way. Let's just let the wisdom of this wash over us in Matthew chapter 5. Now, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him and he began to teach them. He said, so we're going to read through this and just let the echoes of James, or hear the echoes of Jesus in what we've been reading in James. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. That's that Psalm 37 text we read. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Then he goes on to say, blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad. I mean, it sounds like James. Because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. And then Jesus talks a little bit more. And then he says this at the end. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. In other words, this law, this wisdom of God, Jesus is redefining it, reinterpreting it for us, calling us to a different way of life, and saying that way is possible. And as we've said before here, there's these kind of two phases, two things that Jesus calls us to. Repent, in other words, open your mind, think again, look at yourself and be honest and follow. So it's be honest, repent, determine to change, and then follow me. Look at my law, look at my words, look at my teaching. Be centered, grounded by this higher consciousness, this higher wisdom. Now what that can help us do, and we'll wrap up here, is if we look at the next list. Wisdom not only grounds us in self-awareness. So again, we're talking about wisdom and groundedness from the inside out. We can be more self-aware and therefore live a different way. But it also means, in being more self-aware, we can be more aware of others. Wisdom grounds us in awareness of others. And we're just going to read these two verses. I'm not going to say much about them at all because they lead into chapter 2, which we're going to talk about next week, which is all about how we treat people. Those who consider themselves religious and do not keep a tight rein on their tongues deceive themselves, and their religion is worthless. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. So there's something pure about this way of living, and it means we're tuned into other people, we're sensitive to other people, we're sensitive to what really matters. We're not caught up in our own storms and being tossed around and dragged away by our temptations. We're able to live intentionally in a centered way. That means we're more self-aware and we're more compassionately present to other people. And other people aren't a threat to us. We don't have to save them, but they're not projects. We don't have to defend ourselves from them. We can just be compassionately present, and we'll talk more about that, as I said last week. Let's just take a moment. Maybe the band can come up. So we're going to have communion together. Everybody's welcome to take communion. We have gluten-free crackers and fruit juice at the front here and in the middle. And there's different stations around the room where you can respond in different ways. There's some prayer stations. There's a racial justice station, a prayer station for the war in Ukraine at the back, and candles you can light. So let's use this time to respond to God in a way that's appropriate for us. That's going to be different for each of us. You know, what's sort of challenged us this morning? But let's just take a moment. Maybe we can just put the lights down a little bit, Greg, and just close our eyes. We're just going to open our hearts to God for a moment. And we may feel weighed down. you know, like we talk about the trials of life and the struggles of life. Life is hard. And even living in this higher way can be hard. But Jesus said, if you're tired, if you're weary, if you're burnt out on religion, come to me and I'll show you. So let's just take a moment here to center ourselves. A simple way to do that is just to focus on our breathing, just to breathe in and out. To breathe in God's love, breathe in God's wisdom, and then just as we breathe out, just relax and sink into God's love. Let's just center ourselves. And if we feel weary, oppressed, troubled, let's just open our hearts to God. Open our hearts to love. Let's let go of the need, even the desire to fix everything, something we just can't possibly do. And consciously put our trust in that love. Trust that no matter what, love is the way. Love is the higher wisdom. Let's just stay in that place. As I said, you can get up and move around, take communion, respond in different ways around the room, or just sit where you are. And let's center ourselves, let's ground ourselves on something that is freely given to us, wisdom from above.